to Here in LA, Silver Lake Edition. Today we talk with Albert Corrado. You might remember that we had Albert on last year when he was gearing up to go to court where he was suing the LAPD for killing his sister Melly. Melly, you might remember, was a manager at the Silver Lake Trader Joe's and heard a car chase end right outside of their front door. When the suspect ran into the Trader Joe's, the cops senselessly shot into the store and one of the bullets killed Albert's little sister. The Corrado family settled with the city of LA for a record sum of $9.5 million, and Albert is here to tell us about that long, sad, bittersweet journey and what they plan on doing with the payout and what's next for him. So let's welcome Albert Corrado. Hey, everybody. I am here with Albert Corrado.
Hey. Hello. Happy to be back. Thank you for having me back. I've actually been wanting to be back on this show. I had a really fun time the first time, and people have talked to me about that episode. So really proud of it. And I was just listening to it like maybe 2 weeks ago, just
really?
To kind of, yeah, you know, the thing is like, I speak so much and I've done so many hours of podcasts and appearances and have spoken in front of people. So I go back and listen to myself and judge myself on like, I should have been like a little tighter here. I should not have, you know, I should have used a different word. And so I was listening to like times where I felt like I flubbed and I was like, oh, I should have been, that should have been a tighter story. But you know, I've been doing this. I've been speaking in front of crowds since I was like 8 years old. So yeah. Like, it's definitely a thing that I've honed my craft. And so when I feel like I haven't done my best, I'm like, oh, Albert, you should have, you know. And I mean,
so what would you have graded yourself for that last one?
I would say like a solid B.
Okay.
Like not a B minus or B plus, but I feel like a B. There were some things that I feel like I could have been clearer on. Uh-huh. I tend to kind of speak pretty quickly, and sometimes I leave a thread hanging and jump to another one. Again, this is stuff that if people don't do this or pay attention like I do, they're like, oh, you were great. I'm like, thank you, but also like I know that I could have been better. And that's just that's also the thing of like being a guy who is very judgmental.
Right.
I don't like to give myself a lot of breaks.
Yeah.
This is not a therapy session, but you know, but these are things that I think about when I listen back to my appearances on podcasts. Because when I'm on my own podcast, it's like, whatever, this is my house.
Yeah.
I say whatever I want. When you're in another person's podcast, like you want to make sure you brought your A game. So I would say, hey, I brought my A game, but it was a B performance from me. But we'll have to see if people think that way.
Albert, mm-hmm. We are here because you beat the cops.
We beat the cops, yeah.
You beat the cops and took their money.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, okay, right now, you're wearing a Bart Simpson
yes.
T-shirt that says anti-fascist.
And proud of it, man.
And proud
yeah.
of it, man.
Yeah.
And Bart's got a slingshot and an evil eye, and he's aiming right at us. And it must make you feel so good that these cops that... I don't feel like they treated you guys with respect through this whole process.
No, I mean, you know, and that's the thing. People, I think that I spoke to NPR back in like 2020 when we were doing the first March for Melly. And they're like, oh, like, what's the relationship between you and LAPD like? And I'm like, to say we have a relationship is a misnomer. Like, they have never, besides that first week or so, I think I mentioned on our first episode, like, they were apologetic. They were like, we're, you know, they were trying to kind of see how they could do damage control on us. And we didn't really take the bait. We didn't really like, we don't want to stand with them or stand with Chief Moore or whatever. So, you know, it's just, it's one of those things. Like they never, you know, it was like in the media, they never said anything that was too inflammatory towards us. Even when we were coming after them, but behind the scenes, that's where the stuff was happening. We're like, oh, they're trying to toss out our lawsuit. They're, you know, putting my sister's body through a toxicology screen. So obviously in public, the police rarely are ever going to take the hard line like that, because they're obviously trying to sway the average person to say, oh yeah, hey, the cops are good people and they were just doing their jobs. But behind the scenes, when they know that not a lot of people are paying attention, they will do things that are incredibly disrespectful to someone they just killed and to my family, you know.
Let's give some context real quick.
Yes.
For the people who might not have heard that first episode or know who you are.
Yeah.
A few years ago, the police were chasing it was a car chase.
Yeah, Gene Atkins is the guy's name. Yeah, they were chasing him. He'd shot his grandmother. He'd stolen her car and then kidnapped his girlfriend. They pursued him for, I don't know, half an hour. His tire blew out. right outside of the Trader Joe's in Silver Lake where my sister happened to be working that day. And as he went inside the store, they fired 8 rounds into the store. One of them killed my sister, Melly. And that was back in July of 2018.
And so back to your point about them putting a toxicology on her.
Yeah.
She was just a manager of the Trader Joe's doing her job. And so for them to try to collect evidence to use against this victim that should never have even been.
Yeah.
Like we know better than to shoot into a crowded store. Like you doesn't know that?
You would think. And that's the thing is, you know, we've talked about this so much. And I think you constantly talk to people who are like, wait, but that's like, that shouldn't have happened. It's like, yeah, I know. That's why we're here. That's why we're doing this. Because like everything that you've been taught about how the police carry themselves, about how these things usually are supposed to happen, tells you that that is a one in a billion thing to happen. And it happened to us. And that, you know, we are very much living proof of like the worst thing that could have happened that day happened. And the only person who died that day, right? The grandmother was shot 7 times. And she was, I want to say, probably in her 70s or 80s.
And she survived that?
She survived that.
Wow.
Yeah, Jean Atkins got shot in the arm, survived that. The 7 other bullets, or I guess 6 bullets that they fired into the store hit, you know, produce in a shelf. One of them hit my sister and killed her. So, you know, we are living in the result of these, like, you know, weird sort of things that just kind of happen that you don't ever expect. And so, you know, we talk about this stuff and people are like, no way, I can't believe the police would do that. I can't believe the city would say that to you or do that to your family. And it's like, yeah, but like, I have no reason to lie.
Right.
I have no reason to make this up or to, you know, embellish it. If I were to, you know, like to me, when I tell people the stuff that we've gone through, it's just like, I wish it was an embellishment. I wish I was telling you some exaggerated story, but no, it was 6.5 years worth of being put through the ringer by the city. Sometimes by the media, I think we kind of wrestled the narrative back after a while, but definitely we were at the mercy of the machine of police and city agencies and the media. And it's been hard. And I mean, I appreciate you giving me this platform again to kind of talk very openly, because now we don't have to worry about anything.
Great.
We settled with the city. They gave us our money. And I can talk as much shit as I want, you know, which I mean, you know, I've never really shied away from it.
Right.
Because if you listen to the first episode of this podcast that I was on, like, I'm definitely taking a lot of people to task. But this year, I kind of, sort of at the behest of my dad and my lawyers, like, kind of calmed down speaking about it publicly. But
right.
Now, your boy is free to do whatever he wants.
Okay, so let's talk about the 6 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that just how it is, that it takes 6 years for them to pay out? Or do you think that they tried to make this drag on for some reason?
I mean, you know, speaking to other families of people who have gone through this, who were going through this while we were going through it as well, this is definitely symptomatic of what you're put through. I will say the 2 main differences, I think, were the fact that Jean Atkins' criminal trial is still going on.
Oh,
so it was going on concurrently with our lawsuit, and so we were always kind of being put on the back burner, and we were being denied evidence because, hey, he's on trial, and we're trying to pin Melly's murder on him, even though he was not the one who fired the bullets. He created the sort of the incident. He created all the things that happened that day. So we're going to put Melly's murder on him. And
how do you feel about that practice?
I mean, listen, you know, obviously there's some reason why that's a tactic. I understand that, you know, creating scenarios and all that is a thing. But, you know, I've never looked at it as like Jean Atkins was a product of his environment. He was a product of a system who failed him. You know, I've heard little bits and pieces of his life and sort of his family life, and it seems to me like he had a very rough upbringing, father in and out of jail, and so, you know, I look at him and I say, yeah, that's just a guy who was acting out because he had mental health issues, because he felt like that was his only way out. Whatever the issues were, it led him to do that that day. So I don't know. I don't blame him. I don't look at him and say, "Hey, man, you know, you caused the death of my sister." I blame the cops who killed her, because, like, you know, and there's a version of the world where I look at it in the same way that the cops do and say, yeah, he's the one who created the events that happened that day. And so in my mind, it's perhaps easier to do that, because, like, yeah, it's his fault. And yeah, the cops, you know, did what they had to do. But I've never been one to think that. So for me, it's like I have to live with the fact of, like, I live in a city where the police do this kind of stuff, and they've done it over and over. And my sister was, at the time, you know, the latest killing of a person by the LAPD. Since she's been killed, there's been dozens more. But, you know, I don't know. I don't blame him. I don't blame. I feel sorry for the guy. I feel an immense sense of, you know, despair when I think of him, because it's like, yeah, whatever, you know, the things he did that day, whatever sticks, he's going to go to prison for the rest of his life. He's never going to get the help he needs. He's never going to be able to live a normal life. And some people might say that he doesn't deserve it because of what he did that day. I try to believe in restorative justice as much as I can. And for me, again, I look at, like, why did that happen that day? Why did he choose to do that? And so I look at it in a more humanist way as well. And, you know, Melly's not here because the LAPD chose to fire 8 rounds inside of a store.
Do you think that this is going to stop the LAPD from shooting when a suspect goes into the store? Because I think about the Burlington Coat Factory shooting as well. Because it seems to me that, okay, your suspect is trapped in a place where there's the public.
Yeah.
You don't have to shoot. Just secure the exits.
Yeah.
Call for backup. Lord knows they've got backup.
Yes.
And wait it out. Unless, of course, he's got a gun and he's shooting people inside. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then you've got to protect those people. But do you think that the police have learned from this?
No, I mean, and I think the fact that Valentina, the girl who was killed at Burlington, I mean, I would say the fact that happened over 3 years after Melly was killed proved that they didn't learn a damn thing. Mm-hmm. And even still, you know, when Valentina was killed, there was a big outcry. You know, People City Council and Film the Police, we confronted him at a high school football game a few months later.
Because he's a coach there.
He's a coach. Mm-hmm. He's coaching children who are the same age as the girl he killed. And he got paid leave after Valentina was killed and got to go and be around these children. And I would assume some of them didn't even know who he was and what he was responsible for.
Yeah.
We let them know that day. So there's no way that they don't know. But, I mean, the fact that we were having the same conversations and the fact that, like, after Valentina was killed, I was being called by dozens of news agencies saying, oh, there's some similarity between what happened to your sister and to this girl. And the fact that there's just been strings of shootings since then, maybe nothing specifically like Melly or Valentina, but the fact that, like, since Melly was killed, there really hasn't been an attempt by the LAPD or any agency in the city to rein in the LAPD, to teach de-escalation, to even do better training. You know, there's all these sort of superficial things they offer when things like this happen. Like, oh, we're going to put money into a fund to do, you know, better training. There was not even an attempt at that. Mm-hmm. Valentina was killed. There was an outcry. It died down. But there was never an attempt to make it so that doesn't happen. Because ultimately, and this is my own belief, The training is a fancy word for we just want more money. And if you give us more money, we're going to train them better. But we see what better training means. It just means we're going to lose more people. More training leads to them hiring more officers, leads to more people being killed. It's a very simple sort of math problem. But the fact that Melly's death was talked about all over the country and you know, the world as well, and nothing was done of substance in regards to LAPD procedure is criminal to me, and it shows that there was just no political will. And certainly there's never going to be a will from the police to, you know, change their tactics. They don't care. I mean, we can talk about more of this later, but, like, my settlement with the city, my family settlement, was along with 2 other settlements of people killed by the police. So
on that day.
Mm-hmm. And they just don't learn their lesson. And
Because it doesn't come out of their budget.
Well, exactly. And I mean, every damn day I'm listening to the radio or reading something in the newspaper, oh, the city is going broke. And I'm like, but, like, you know, yeah, it's the, you know, they're like, oh, you know, they'll mention the payouts and the settlements. And I'm just like, you're presenting that as it's factual. But, like, there's no criticism there. There's no critical analysis of like, well, if this is going to lead to people being furloughed or the city having to scrounge around for money and look under the couch cushions or whatever, why not address the problem? Why not address this gigantic elephant in the room that's 9,500 people bleeding the city budget and then costing them millions more because they kill people. It doesn't make any sense that people don't have the political will to go after them. And even message about, we are literally recording this on election day.
Right.
And there are no city council candidates or any other candidates right now who have said anything meaningful about policing in this cycle. What? In my cycle, it was...
Hold on. What about Isabel saying F the police?
I don't think she really believes that. I don't think that she, again, this is like...
She was just... quoting a line?
I think she was quoting a line, and I think it was clearly it was an attempt to by Kevin De Leon's people to catch her in something, but she doesn't truly believe that. I mean, she was taking pictures and working for Garcetti. Like, there's no way that I'm sorry. I just, I'm a cynical dude when it comes to this stuff.
This
is
why I love People's City Council. Yeah. Because you guys push the left further to the left,
mm-hmm.
which I think is good because the Republicans have no problem pushing people further to the right.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting how liberals, even in LA, which is could be a very liberal city.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hesitate for things like that. I didn't see other politicians or supporters saying in defense of Isabel, mm-hmm. saying, yeah, the cops should be defunded. Yeah. Yeah. The cops should be criticized. They're not on some pedestal. Instead, they kind of just waited back. In fact, People's City Council was the loudest against KDL back in the day.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And without you, I don't know how many other people would have been on his case. In fact, after we recorded our episode, I found a video of you being thrown out of City Council, which was beautiful.
Yeah.
You're laughing because I was laughing too.
Yeah.
There's not groups like you. If there was no People City Council, I don't think that there's a lot of groups that would be doing what you do.
I mean, I think and I appreciate you saying that. I think we definitely roll with people like Black Lives Matter LA still shows up. So there are people who stand with us who do that. But I would say that I would agree with your larger point in that like there are far too few voices in Los Angeles who are sort of messaging like we are, because we see through all that, man. It's like, yeah, sure. Again, is Isabel better than KDL? Sure, yeah, in some
ways.
That's
easy, though.
It's easy. It's easy to be, she's not actively...
But you're saying she could be what maybe her heart is?
Yeah, I mean, but because she's not actively saying racist things and actively, like, harming constituents or whatever. But, like, a lot of it is theater, It's like her saying, fuck the police. Okay, well, cool, man, but like, are you going to govern in that mode? Are you actually going to message and govern? If you get the seat, are you actually going to go after the police? And there's this mythical thing that people say is going to happen. Once we get a majority of leftists in there, we're going to do this. And I'm like, I don't fucking believe it. I'm sorry. Eunesis right now has lost so much credibility and goodwill in the time that it's been like a little over a year since we did our first episode.
Yeah.
She's lost a lot of credibility with a lot of people. And to me, that just shows that, like, so many people say they're not going to be willing to play the game, and they play the game as soon as the game starts.
By the way, I always forget that you ran for...
2022, baby.
And I think part of your cynicism... is part of mine, which is Hugo over here was supposed to be what we think Isabel is going to be, is this liberal person of color who is not going to vote for more funding for the cops and things like that. And almost instantly, he turned his back on the things that we thought we were voting for him for, those of us who voted for him. And so I can understand why you're nervous about going all in on Isabel, because here's Eunesis, who I think did stick to her platform a little bit longer.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I'll say she definitely gave it a really good try. And there were times where I was like, hey, you know what? She's actually doing better than I thought she would. And then the whole Hillside Via thing happens. You know, my roommate is a big organizer with Hillside Via. So I've been kind of like very much ground zero of him talking to me about this stuff. And
let's give context to that too. This is an apartment complex.
Yes.
That was it. Rent control, this place?
I believe it was. Yeah. And they, you know, basically the tenants wanted to buy it. And then the city came in favor of the guy who owns it, who's a slumlord. And it's been this whole battle. Look it up on Twitter. It's so many moving parts. But Eunice said, hey, I'm going to fight for you guys. I'm going to do what you want me to do. And then she was advocating for this slumlord and is saying that she agrees with something. There was one thing that I saw on Twitter that made me roll my eyes, but it was like, oh, that a tenant could be kicked out for any loud or any noise ordinance breaches. So like if you're playing music too loud, you could be evicted on those grounds.
Crazy.
And she says, hey, that's just being a good neighbor. And I'm just like, you know, this is, again, who is she, you know, serving at the pleasure of at this point?
Right.
If not for her constituents, then there's the powers that be, the people who fund her, whatever you want to say that is. To me, that is not the mark of a person who gives a shit about the people and the things that she said she gave a shit about.
Because I'll tell you, that's a loophole that a lot of landlords would love. Because I'm in rent control and I've lived here for over 20 years.
Really? Sure. Damn. Okay. Wow.
I mean, can't you tell? Look, kind of lived
in. It's very lived in. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Also, the floors aren't fixed because they don't have to.
Yeah.
You know? And so I'm sure tonight, if the election goes the way that I want it to go, I'm going to fucking play some music.
Yeah.
When the Dodgers won and people were going crazy,
yeah.
they were blasting their music. And I'm sure if a landlord was like, I'm just going to camp out outside of the buildings that I want to, and I'm going to record these noises, I'm going to call the cops, I'm going to have it on record that there's a police action against them, and I can kick them out. How is Eunice serving the poor people that she calls fam in all of her
social? Yeah, that's the thing. It is just like, you know, I try not to be cynical, and I see people I follow on Instagram or Twitter and friends of mine who are like, oh, you know, I'm voting for, you know, and obviously Kamala, that's a whole thing for me. But even just seeing like, oh, Isabel, and I'm like, okay, like, again, but just dream bigger, man. You know, like this isn't, I get it. Like electoralism is a necessary evil at this point.
Yeah.
And I want Kevin DeLeon to disappear into the ether, and I never want to hear from that piece of shit again. But like, you know, but that doesn't mean I'm going to go canvass for this person who I don't actually think believes in what she says she believes in. Certainly not. She's not going to be brave enough to actually say what she believes in one way or the other, whether she's more left or more right than she's, you know, seemingly claiming to be. She's not going to say that because it's all about trying to get in there. And then hopefully she'll work with Nithia and Ugo and Eunice to do something. But I truly don't believe. And I'm telling you, in the year since I was here, Ugo has also even somehow sank lower.
So we're talking about CD14 when we talk about Nithia and KDL. I think he's going to lose by 20 points.
Yeah.
I don't think it's even going to be close. Because she beat him in the primary.
Yeah,
pretty handily. Entire field.
Yeah, yeah.
Most of that area voted against him. I don't see how that changes now. But when he was trying to attack her, he would say she's a socialist, she's down with DSA. First of all, how do you feel about DSA? The Democratic Socialists, is that what it is?
Of America, yeah.
Right. How do you feel about LA DSA?
Oh, I mean, I think it's pretty famously, I, along with People's City Council, do not like them. They have become an arm of the Democratic National Party, as far as I'm concerned.
Which is a party you guys don't like.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. But again, you have to understand that we think about this stuff, and it's not enough that this person's going to be better. It's not enough that we're advocating for things that are a little better than what we have right now. We want to, you know, again, ultimately we want to burn it all down. And DSA got a lot of heat and momentum after AOC in 2016. And I think it started as a group of people who really wanted to make change. And I mean, that is always something you want to see. You want to see people getting engaged. And I think the effect of DSA as an entity across the country was a really positive thing for a while. It brought a lot of people who didn't think that this world was for them into this world and to, you know, run for office and be involved. And so I think that that is a positive effect. What we see now, though, is them clinging to power, clinging to, you know, some sort of semblance of being accepted, and they want to say that they're going to hold their elected officials that they endorse accountable. It's never going to happen. It has never happened. They do things like, oh, we're going to censure Nithya Raman. It's like, that is the most gutless, impotent thing you can possibly do. So I think that they don't actually wield any real power anymore. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of their leadership is trying to be too close to power, especially in Los Angeles. You see them kind of simping for, I mean, when Ugo ran, it was just Ugo City. They didn't care about anybody else. That was their dude. And now they're having to eat crow every time he says and does something stupid.
And they eat it instead of holding him accountable, right?
Yeah.
Have they ever held him accountable?
I don't think so. I mean, and again, it's hard to, and that's something that you deal with when you're in electoralism, is like, how do you actually hold someone in power accountable? Like, if you help them get into office, what can you possibly do besides, you know, withhold the vote when the vote comes around again? There are just not a lot of ways to hold them accountable.
I
that makes sense.
I don't know. I think you could. In fact, now that they have tried to take over Knock LA,
yeah,
why not use that platform as 10 reasons we're angry at the person that mm-hmm. we used to support? Because that's what regular people do.
Yeah. Yeah.
When Obama didn't legalize weed, I was pissed off. I wrote about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, when Trump supporters didn't get that wall or have Mexico pay for it, they should have rallied against it.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said about that. I think that, but again, I think the problem is that people want to be close to power. They don't want to lose access to that. And the moment that you sort of stand up for your principles and say, "Hey, man, we don't think what you're doing is good," mm-hmm. you lose access to that. Because no matter who the person is, whether it's Bernie Sanders or whoever, like your heroes, you start criticizing them too much and you're asking too much of them.
Yeah.
They're not gonna let you in. Rarely does a politician see the light and say, "Oh, you know what? You're right. I got this whole thing wrong." It's like once they're set on the course, mm-hmm. it is hard for them to break that course unless some crazy, you know, aberration happens.
Yeah.
They're gonna kind of stick with the course. There's no way right now that Nithya is gonna somehow take back the last few years of her governance and her coming out in support of Israel while they're committing a genocide. You know, it's just like these things are just like, at a certain point, they want to save face. And to them, it makes more sense to save face by continuing on the path rather than changing your mind. And I think it's a radical idea to say that you can publicly change your mind. If you say, "I was wrong," like that will get you so much credit.
Totally.
That will get people to be like, "Whoa, okay." Like, you rarely see people in power mm-hmm. who've done bad things and made bad decisions come out and say, "You know what? I called it incorrectly. I'm so sorry. What can I do to gain your trust back?" Ugo won't do it. Nithya won't do it. Mm-hmm. Maybe a Eunice will do it. I don't know her personally.
Yeah.
Maybe she's got that in her. But like, it's very rare for people or organizations to say, "We fucked up and we want to like make it up to you."
Well, part of the reason is people, and I don't even know why politicians are like this. Aren't you supposed to have thick skin when you enter the public world, no matter what it is? And so politicians freak out when you call them flip-floppers. We haven't heard that in a long time.
John Kerry, shout out. Remember
right,
those?
Right. We haven't heard the term flip-floppers because, to your point, people don't say anymore, "I made a mistake."
There's no political nuance. There's no it's insane.
Even though we know as humans that we grow and we change. And when I was a kid, I didn't like sushi. Now I like sushi. That doesn't make me a flip-flopper.
Yeah. I think ultimately that is what is the problem with dealing with the police, dealing with these people who are in power, mm-hmm. is that, sure, the police said, "You know what, we're sorry about the death of Melly Corrado." But it wasn't like, "Hey, we need to like have a dark night of the soul and figure some shit out and make sure this doesn't happen again." That was never done. And I've met people other family members of people killed by police after Melly was killed.
Mm-hmm.
And they have gone through similar things to me. Have asked the same of people around them, of the police, was just saying, "Hey, why does this keep happening? Can you do something about it?" And the police especially are never going to say, we're so sorry. We're going to figure it out. We're going to, it's like, no, we got to move on and we need more money. And, you know,
were the police fired?
No, they were not fired.
Okay. So isn't that step one?
You would think, I mean, again, that it's like, it's because again, it's like the police have so many protections, whether it's federal or local or politicians who like them or city agencies who lean, you know, very cop friendly. Mm-hmm. So you would think, I mean, at the bare minimum, losing your job and not having access to a gun and all these resources would be the first thing. But as far as I can tell, the two cops were given paid leave, as happens, you know. Mm-hmm. And then we're back on the force. And I think they probably, I would assume that they got changed to another beat, another station,
right?
Far, you know, further away from that, because, you know, the cops are scared that people are gonna, you know, we knew their names within the first few months, whatever. We're not psychos. We're not gonna do anything. But we knew, you know, they know that, hey, we don't want to have this. Is like there's too much heat on these cops right now.
Yeah.
So they sent them somewhere else. But you know, we, as far as I know, and I'm pretty sure I think I looked them up a few months ago on Transparent California. Great website, by the way. You can see the salaries of a lot of state and local employees, and they're still making money. They're still on the force, making now probably close to $200,000 a year. And they murdered someone 6 years ago.
Did they both write you personal letters of apology?
No. I mean, if they ever wrote those, we never saw them. Mm. I'll say this. I don't think they did. If they did, I would assume that our lawyers probably knew not to show it to us.
Why is that?
Because, I'll say this. I'm not a religious person. I don't really believe in anything like that. I believe there's good in this world. I believe you have to be a good person. I believe you should forgive people to a degree. To me, I don't know that I could ever in my heart find a way to forgive those two people. I don't care if they think they were doing their job or that's what they had to do or whatever. I had to bury my sister, man. I had to live without her. I had to see her body be put into the ground and never, and to be able to never speak to her again and not have her around for holidays. And then to have to go through this bullshit of possibly going to trial and all this stuff. I don't know. To me, that's just like, I think you can do something bad enough to someone that they never can forgive you. And you gotta be okay with that. And like, if they're ever going to be looking for forgiveness from me, I don't think they're ever going to get it. My dad tends to be a little bit more on the, you know, he's still got some Catholic shit in him, so maybe he'll be able to. My brother, very Christian, holds that dear, but even he's just like, I don't know, man. He's like, I want to forgive him. Christ is all about forgiveness, and I don't know that I can. And I think that is a very honest way to look at it, because like, you can forgive people for many, many sins, but like, I don't, that one to me is just like, I don't want to hear from them. I don't care if they feel bad about it or it keeps them up at night or they have, you know, nightmares about it. Like I do too, brother. And I'm sorry. If I were to kill someone's loved one, even if it was under the, you know, the order of law or the uniform of law, like I think I'd be fine if they didn't forgive me. I don't know. I just look at it, to me, it's just like, it's such a painful thing that I can't really see past forgiving the people who did it.
But I also think if you were in their shoes, you would have quit. You would have been public about your sorrow, and you would have said something. I mean, by the way, I follow you on Twitter.
Okay.
You're so good on Twitter.
Thank you, man. I do my best, you know?
This is why you're good. You keep it so real out there. And sometimes it seems like you're drunk or high or whatever, which, trust me, I'm projecting.
Okay, sure.
Because
sure,
I'm
sure.
Drunk and high when I'm reading it. But it's you've got very little filter on there, which I love. And you're funny, and you're saying funny things. And so if I was a cop who was that kind of a person, there's no way you wouldn't have known that I was sorry.
We have to talk about power and how it operates. I mean, power gains nothing from being, you know, humble or being, for, you know, asking for forgiveness. It's not something that power does. And I think that, you know, the two officers who did it, I mean, you know, I'm sure they feel bad about it. I'm sure that they want to be, you know, giving them the benefit of the doubt, they probably want to deal with it and want to be given some sort of forgiveness.
Right.
But because they're part of this system that is so corrupt and so vile and so masculine and awful and all that, there's no room for them to talk about that with anybody. There's no room for them to say, hey, you know, I'm feeling this way. It's like, you did your job and you upheld the law and you're good to go. And here's more money and all that stuff. And so there's no, whether or not they feel this way or want to apologize or whatever, it doesn't really matter to me because they are part of a system and they choose to continue to be part of the system that oppresses people, that kills people. And to me, it's like, you know what, man, like, it takes a level of delusion to think that what you did was okay and that you're continuing to do good things after. And I would be so surprised if those two cops didn't have other shootings on their record, maybe not fatal ones, but certainly people that they shot in the line of duty.
Trial?
There was not a trial. So we filed a lawsuit in November of 2018. You know, everyone saw it coming.
When was the shooting?
July.
Okay, so a couple months after.
Yeah, so we went to a family lawyer that we knew, and he put us in touch with a big firm that handles this stuff. They take on LAPD. And
do you want to give him a shout out?
Yeah, Taylor and Ring. Shout out my
Taylor and who?
Taylor and Ring.
And Ring, like Ring doorbell?
Yeah. They're a pretty big name in local LA law because like they take on the LAPD. They've gotten big settlements from LAPD, LAUSD, the Boy Scouts. A lot of like sexual abuse cases, a lot of like wrongful death and loss of limb and all that. That's kind of their specialty.
Okay.
Our family lawyer, Ron Rosengarten, shout out to my boy. he's sort of a regular lawyer. That wasn't his forte, but he's like, hey, like I'll help you get in touch with these bigger firms who can do this, who like specialize in taking on these groups. And so we did that, filed the lawsuit in November of 2018. And I mean, honestly, almost 6 years to the day, we finally concluded everything. We got paid out. Everything was done. It was hell. It was so many things happened from 2018 to 2024 that just were so, just like, you know, on top of grief, on top of like living without someone you love, like just having to be put through that system is, I mean, it's, I wouldn't wish it on anybody. It was so rough. It was, you know, being in the public eye, it was grieving in the public eye. It was grieving while you had to go to, you know, to be deposed by people, you know, our lawyers would sit us down and we'd have these 9-hour days at their offices, like going over, you know, who was Melly? Who are you? Where are you from? You know, all this information, having to celebrate every year anniversary, Melly's birthday, Christmas and Thanksgiving and all these things and living life and getting into relationships and just all these things with this looming thing of like, we are going to trial someday and mm-hmm. we don't know when it's going to be. And, you know, it was looking like March of 2020 was going to be the trial date. COVID happens, and then, you know, we just, it's then years and years of being told that we're going to trial soon. Never mind, LOL, JK.
They weren't able to do it on Zoom or anything like that? Is that not legal?
I don't know if it's legal. I mean, I do wonder if that was, but I will say the main issue here, and this is what I wanted to kind of illustrate to people, was that, like, we sued them, and because... So every case is different, right? Every case of this is different. It has its own unique sort of set of circumstances. So with other people who I've talked to, it's like their loved one who was killed, you know, maybe they had a gun. Maybe they were running from the police. Maybe they were... So there's these obstacles to get through if you're going to trial. You have to convince a jury that this thing that the police are going to latch onto is not bad, and that they should, your loved one shouldn't be judged for that. Mm-hmm. Anthony Vargas, you know, murdered by the sheriffs, you know, ran from the police because he was scared. It was 1 a.m. He was walking through his neighborhood, and they ran up on him, and he ran. And that has been used against him over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
With Melly, there's nothing. It's just like, hey, she wasn't talking to the police, probably didn't even know she had been shot by the police. But because of Gene Adkins and his existence, like, we were We've never seen the actual police report from the night Melly was killed.
Really?
The initial police report that says what happened. It has the officer statements that were said that night, probably 2 hours after Melly was killed. So they were not rehearsed. They were not coached. It was the rawest you were ever going to hear those officers talk about this.
So they sealed that?
It was, they said, hey, we have this criminal case going, and if we give you this, then it jeopardizes our case against this person. A guy who, by the way, shot his grandmother and shot at the police and did all these things.
Yeah. You can't win that case?
That's what I'm saying. And so, but again, it was a convenient way for them to keep us out of the loop, to make it so if we go to trial without crucial evidence, which, you know, we were also not given a lot of photos and a lot of other stuff that was crucial to our case, was not allowed to be given to us. Or if we were given anything, it was redacted or it was heavily edited or whatever. And we were going, there was a time in 2021 where we were going to trial, and we had to be the ones saying, we're not ready. Like, we do not have enough stuff. We need to depose the cops again. And so the only statements we had from the police were the ones given to us a few years later when they were coached and, you know, prepared, and they were very much doing a deposition that cops do long after the crime has happened.
Mm-hmm.
So we've never seen that police report. We've never seen a lot of stuff from that initial night. There was a video of the security camera of inside the Trader Joe's that Melly, you know, you can see Melly being shot, and it cuts 5 seconds. We never figured out what happened there. There's this, all this stuff.
Well, hold on.
Yeah.
The cops got Trader Joe's internal video and edited it.
So yeah, so what kind of we deduced was that they got the original SIM card for this camera.
Mm-hmm.
They went and made a copy, cut out 5 seconds, gave the copy back to Trader Joe's, and then finally it came to us. So here's the thing: I've never seen this video because my dad hasn't, because it shows,
you don't want to see it,
in Melly's last moments. I can't bring myself to do that.
Yeah.
Obviously, I trust our lawyers, and they're like, hey, it goes from you see Melly in the threshold of the store and going outside to then it cuts 5 seconds, and then Melly is very visibly shot and then goes and hides, and that's where they find her later.
Why are they cutting this out?
I don't know, and we've never been told, and the only time that they were willing to show us something, they wanted me and my dad to go to like LAPD headquarters downtown without our lawyers, and we're like, no fucking way, we're not doing that. And our lawyers were like, don't do that. Like, it's, we don't know what their
play is
here.
Like, they specifically said only you two can come.
Yeah, and I was there. I was listening to that phone call, so it wasn't like secondhand information. It was like, no, hey, we want you to come see this video. And our lawyers were like, we don't even know if this is legal. Like, we don't know what their play is, but you're not gonna go do that. They sent us the copy, and we have never been told why there was 5 seconds missing. We believe that it's because it shows that Melly was somewhere where the cops say that she wasn't.
Oh.
That if she was outside of the store, it looks better for them because it means that, because if she's inside the store, that's damning as hell. Like, that is, you could kill many, many other people if you're firing into the store. If Melly is within the store, like, that is pretty, and again, so we think that 5 seconds shows it. We'll never know at this point because we settled, and you know, there's a part of me that wishes that we didn't.
Yeah.
There's a part of me that is happy that we did. You know, it's a very much a conflicting set of feelings here, but you know, there were things like that the whole time where it's like, we are going to go to trial. Pandemic hits. Okay. That's offsetting everything. Okay. 2021. Cool. We're not ready. Then there was a time they're like, oh yeah, June 10th, 2022 is trial date. You know, we're like 9 months out, and I'm like, I'm running a fucking city council campaign. Like, there's no fucking way I'm going to be ready to go and do this. And it wasn't even like I said, hey, postpone it. I need more time. It was like, whatever. If it happens, it happens. My duty is to my sister. My duty is to my family. My staff will understand if somehow we – there were moments where I really thought we were going to go to trial in early 2022. I think I'm going to drop out of the race because I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
Then it got, you know, shuffled to June. Okay. It's going to be after the election. So let me, you know, I'll be fine. I'll just need some rest. And then, you know, kept getting pushed down in 2023 was basically, you know, okay, yeah, hey, November. Oh, no, just, no, actually, there was a time where it was going to be October 19th, 2023, which is my birthday.
Oh.
So it would have been my 35th birthday that we're going to start trial. Hey. So this 6 years of us going through this shit was like, either we didn't have enough information, we were being stonewalled. Initially, they wanted to dismiss the case about a year and a half in, saying, you have no, this Gene Atkins, this guy over here, he's the one who killed your sister. So take it up with him. The judge said, no way.
Good.
Someone was killed here. Someone needs to be held accountable here. Something needs to be done.
Was this the city attorney who was trying to dismiss
it? Oh, yeah.
Which one?
I believe it, when summary judgment, it was whoever.
So Mike Fuhrer?
Mike Fuhrer. Yeah, it was his office who initially were trying to do the summary judgment, basically saying you have no case. It didn't go for it, and then...
So fuck you, Mike Fuhrer.
Oh, yeah. Well, fuck him, and fuck Christian Bjorquez, all these people who I've had to deal with and listen to their stupid fucking names when I go to these hearings, these pieces of shit who, like, think that they're doing something good by advocating for the city who murdered my sister.
Right.
So...
Because those two are people who can't say there was a mistake made.
Yeah.
Because, look, we don't think that they intentionally wanted to shoot anybody who they weren't aiming at, right?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, they definitely.
And therefore, we made a mistake.
Yeah.
We are sorry. Yeah. We're going to change it so these mistakes don't happen again. One way we're going to do it is we're going to fire these dudes.
Yeah.
Because you can't have dudes making mistakes with guns.
Yeah. So instead of taking the route of like the route of like, you know what, we fucked up and we're going to try our best to make up for it or whatever. Not that that would have been. That actually does anything, but at least it's trying to do something.
Right.
What the route they took was like, fuck you, you have no case. We're trying to see if your sister had drugs in her system, and if she did, you better believe that's gonna leak to the press, and that right. They're gonna have a field day with it.
Because if you're high, you yeah. should be shot at the Trader
Joe's. Oh, it was her own fault. Oh, right. She was. You know, they would try to spin it some way, and we knew that. But it was like,
yeah.
So instead of taking any route that seems even slightly like you give a shit about humans and you want to make up for your mistakes, they went the opposite way, saying you don't have a case. Fuck your sister. You know, you're not getting shit from us. You're not getting anything. We're going to
fuck with the evidence.
Yeah, and we're going to basically. Try to grind you down.
Right.
And because we have all this power, we're going to continue to ask the judge for extensions. And they did. And the judge always granted them.
Mm.
And then at the end of this year, or last year rather, we got a new judge. And we didn't know about her. And we were like, well, she's younger and she seems like kind of with it. And then it just became, you know, same thing. We're going to shuffle it off. And then, you know... By May of 2024, there's like a legal thing that says within 5 years of a lawsuit being filed, you have to start jury selection, like by law.
Okay.
And if you don't follow that, then the city gets some sort of fine or something like that. Because of COVID, it gave them a 6-month extension.
Mm.
So meaning by May of this year, we had to go to trial. So we knew... Even with the bullshit of, you know, it was January, then February, then March. We literally were, it was March 10th, I think, was supposed to be the start of our trial date. And I was up at 7 a.m. on March 10th, ready to go to court. Oh, hey, sorry. The judge is, her calendar is too full. We're doing early May. And so, like, okay, we're like, well, May, you know, 15th, we legally have to start. So we knew that was it. We're going to
trial.
They
dragged it on as long as they could.
And you know the thing that happens when we knew we would get a new trial date is like the anxiety starts, the fear, the
oh really?
Let me prepare myself. Okay, what am I going to do? Because you know, I had gone to do court support for the Vargas family, and that was federal court, so different than state court. What we were going through. But that was such an awful experience for me. And I wasn't even, my family wasn't even on the stand. But seeing my friends go through what they went through and listening to these fucking sheriffs talk about why it was okay that they killed Anthony Vargas and basically doing play acting on the night that they killed him and raising their voices. And one guy even said, well, you know, I felt in danger and I knew that I had the right to defend myself however I could. And I don't feel bad that I shot this kid. On the stand, in front of his family, in front of, like, dozens of people who were there to support, it was like, there was a part of me that was like, you know, there's a part of me that exists that's like, fuck everyone, fuck this shit, we're going to trial, I'm going to make them squirm in their seats, they're going to have to like remember my name and all that. And there was a part of me that's like, can my dad go through with this? Because my dad's just telling me like, I feel worried, I feel anxious, I'm depressed, I miss Melly, I don't, you know, this trial, the constant kind of changes and setbacks, like this is getting to me. Like, I want this to be over. Like, Melly has been gone for a long time. We've done marches, we've done ceremonies. I want this thing that existed a few months after Melly was killed, I want it to be done. We wanted to for it to be done. And, you know, when MAIDS rolled around, they were like, hey, we want to talk about, you know, settling, mediation. And I was just like, dude, like, I don't want to do this. I feel like if we settle, we've somehow accepted defeat. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, like, I don't know, man, like, you know, this is a tactic they use. Obviously, it's meant to make you want to quit, to grind you down. But I thought of, you know, the things that I've accomplished in Melly's name while this was happening. You know, for me, the trial was never the most important thing. It was the most annoying thing. It was a thing that took up a lot of space in my brain that was like, man, okay, well, that's who the fuck knows when that's happening. Is it going to happen while I'm running for city council? Is it going to happen while I'm whatever part of my life I'm in? Like, who the fuck knows? But so I was like, okay, the trial's there and it's going to be there. And our lawyers told us it was going to take a few years at least to kind of settle. So let me go do all this other stuff. And so all the other stuff that I did, you know, being part of People's City Council and, you know, running for city council and all those things for me were the way to fight the cops in other ways. And so I was like, okay, again, don't want to settle, but my dad is kind of hinting that he does. But he, you know, depending on the day, he's also like, let's give him a fight. We're going to go. We're going to, you know, we're going to have our movie moment of like, no, you're out of order. You know, that sort of thing. You sort of dream of that stuff of being like, this is our time to let these people know who we are in a court of law. And we're going to, the guys, the people who killed Melly are going to look us in the face and see nothing but hostility. And like, we know there is still a part of me that exists that is regretful that we're not doing that. That's like, oh, you know, it would have been cool. But then I thought, you know, the things that I've done outside of that are significant. They mean something. People tell me that they were inspired by a thing. And guess what? I don't have to shut up. You know, I don't have to, even if we get this money, which it's never been about the money, but that's the only recourse we had.
Right.
We sued them because that's what you do. That's the only way that you're going to get any sort of like, I don't know, recognition that something bad happened. Mm-hmm. So we sued them. And I said, you know, if there's any attempt by them to say, hey, you can't talk about us, you can't talk about this, you know can't whatever, then we're not fucking doing it. See you in court. And there was never an attempt at that. We settled for $9.5 million, which is the highest settlement out of court in the history of Los Angeles. So, you know, there are things to, you know, I'm sort of proud of it. I'm a little sad that we're not going to trial. I'm so relieved that my dad can just chill. He works construction. It's very hard on his body. I'm just
How old is dad?
64. Just turned 64 in September.
Is he retired now?
He still
wants to work?
Yeah. I mean, but that's his immigrant work ethic.
Yeah.
But what I told him is like, hey, man, now that you, oh, by the way, the lawyers take 40% of that. So everything.
I didn't know it was that much.
So that's sort of the going rate.
Damn.
Whatever. Again, it's never been about the money.
Right.
And them getting us a settlement means that they did everything in their power to get us that. So that's fine. But still, it's more money than I've ever had, than I'll ever see in my life. And I told my dad, you know, you just work as a handyman, you know, like fix buildings, do little bullshit things here and there. But you don't have to break your back 6 days a week.
Right.
You don't have to
work 6 days a week?
Oh, yeah. Even
have
now.
Have you ever worked 6 days a week before?
I have when I worked two jobs. I was working as a barista and...
Yeah.
I was working a barista job and grocery store, Trader Joe's, actually.
I ask because it doesn't compare at all to what your dad has done. But I was an ice cream man guy.
Oh, really? Okay.
In Illinois.
Okay.
One summer where the guy made us work 6 days.
Yeah.
It is so hard to only have one day off.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You have to fit in your whole life in that day. And if it's a Sunday, then you're not running any errands.
No. So how long has your dad worked 6 days?
I mean, he's kind of like, I mean, my whole life is been really kind of me looking at my dad and like on the one hand admiring his work ethic and on the other being like, that sounds awful. You know, like yeah. I've worked summers with him. You know, I've definitely in times in my adult life where I was broke and he's like, hey, come work with me and I'll show you how to do stuff and I'll pay you this much. And I'm like, okay, you know, I've done it. So it's been my whole life that he is a guy who wakes up at 5:30 in the morning. He's at Home Depot at 6 in the morning.
Wow.
Picking up supplies, you know, getting some sweet bread and a tea and going to the work site. So
does he love this?
He loves it. I mean, he loves it because he's also, I mean, he's a general contractor.
Yeah.
So he's able to, you know, help design stuff with certain clients. He's able to really kind of put his vision of, you know, he takes what the customer or the client wants and then does his thing. And I mean, the man can look at a pile of dirt and tell you this is going to be a house. And I've seen him like we would, I remember one time, like years ago, this woman wanted to make, there was basically a basement full of dirt that she wanted to turn into like a home gym. And we sat there for 2 weeks, me and two laborers and my dad digging all that. But my dad's like, okay, this is where this is going to go and blah, blah, blah. And then I went back to, I think to school. And by the time I came back to work again in the off time, it was built. And I was like, how did you know? So he has a mind for it. And, mm-hmm. and I think that he also has this work ethic of like, he's been broke before. He's been, you know, living in his car before.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, and this is, you know, the years before Melly was killed, were some of the toughest for our family. You know, my dad was struggling financially, like, you know, construction can be, you know, it's either boom or bust sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there were times where he was sleeping in his car, wow. Renting hotel rooms to live in.
Wow.
I was working two jobs, barely getting by myself. You know, Melly was doing okay at Trader Joe's, but none of us were in places where we felt like, oh, we're successful and we, you know, we want to, you know, things are good for us. It was like, no, we're one emergency away from being completely broke. And my dad, you know, when Melly was killed, was crashing on the couch of his girlfriend's daughter because, you know, his credit wasn't great and he couldn't get a place and wasn't doing very well financially. And so when we got the news, I'm like, I had moved to Minneapolis and was working two jobs, you know, barely getting by still, but, you know, doing okay. My dad was crashing on couches and having to, like, you know, go around town looking for work and dropping his business card. And it's like, he's always been a person who understands what it means to be poor.
Mm.
And I unfortunately have kind of had flirtations with that in my adult life where I've also slept in my car and been very broke and, like, you know, having to survive off of 7-Eleven pizza, you know, like these things that, like, they really kind of,
yeah,
you know, build you into a different person. And so now having to go through what we did with Melly and the possible trial and all that, like, you know, it's sort of the end, the culmination of like many, many hard years. Cause, like, you know, 2 years before Melly was killed, we're all in rough spots. Melly gets killed and we're in a rough spot for that first week. And then, you know, we got a GoFundMe. We got some life insurance money because Melly had life insurance
Good.
Yeah, you know, so little things like that help, but it was still, you know, but it's like, ultimately, it's like, yeah, okay, now I don't have to worry about rent for a bit. Mm-hmm. Now my dad cannot crash on a couch. We can get him an apartment.
Right.
But it was just kind of like, okay, but Melly's not here. And it's just sad, you know?
So it's funny because anytime I hear about people getting a windfall, I always and when I dream of mine, I always think about buying a house.
Yeah.
Maybe your dad doesn't buy a house or you don't buy a house for him. Since he loves construction, maybe he can build the house that he's always wanted.
Oh, trust
wanted.
Me.
That part of the plan?
If you think that he hasn't pitched that idea to me,
pitch? You're not going to approve this plan?
Oh, no, but it's more not even pitch. It's just more kind of like, there are a few options that we could go with. And, you know, obviously one of them just being like, let's find a house and buy it, and or you know, buy a cheap house and
fix it up.
Yeah, fix it up, because my dad is a very right. gifted contractor. But right. there is definitely talk about like getting a piece of land and building a house, and my dad can build his dream house and all that. So yeah, there is that.
Would it be here in LA?
Well, that's the question. I mean, it's.
Or is LA a sore spot for you guys now?
Well, I mean, yeah, that you're kind of getting into, like, we've talked about staying in Los Angeles, and the only reason we wouldn't is because it is very expensive.
Okay.
And you know, and again, we love it, and yeah, there's definitely history, and it's a bit of a sore spot for me personally. I mean, I was in Pittsburgh until 3 weeks ago for 2.5 months. As soon as we like the. Couple months after they approved the settlement, because it got approved in May.
Yeah.
And we didn't get paid out till November.
Okay.
But I was like, okay, I've done everything I can. We're getting a settlement. I've done all this stuff. I need to go home. I need to go somewhere.
Why'd you pick Pittsburgh?
Someone I was seeing was going there.
Okay.
And so it was like, okay, let me go there and try something out. But so LA, I don't know. For my dad, it's like, we want to stay here and we love it. It took so much from us.
Yeah.
But there's also kind of like a sense of like, maybe if this is a new chapter, if this is a new start of something, perhaps somewhere else is the, and I talk about this, like, it's not like my dad and I are a united front.
Right.
As far as like, you know, we agree on everything in regards to what we want to do for Melly in the future, but he doesn't know where he wants to live or where he wants to end up. And honestly, I don't either. I mean, I love LA. Being gone from it for 2.5 months was great. I mean, I'm here now indefinitely and going to figure some stuff out. But there is a sense of like, LA is where I want to be to a degree. It's kind of where I feel like I'm called to and needed. But there's also the part of me that's just like, you know what, man? Like, I came back from Minneapolis with a suitcase of 1 week's worth of clothing because I didn't know what was happening. And I stayed for 6 years. And maybe it's time to move on for a while. And the journey that started the you know, July 22nd, the day after Melly was killed, is now done. We've concluded that. I can point to 10 things in LA that I was a part of that I'm proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's time to take a little bit of a break. So I'm at a bit of a crossroads. I think my dad is too. I mean, if I were to guess, I think he is gonna stay within the boundaries of LA County and we'll figure out a housing situation for him. He will have a house. I will make sure of that. But there's definitely, you know, it's like we're at the end of a book or something. You know, we're end of a giant, very painful chapter. And now, you know, there's the exhilaration and the fear of like, okay, hey, we have money. We have some resources. What the fuck are we gonna do?
Did I see you travel to the Bada Bing?
Yeah, I mean, so I drove from here to Pittsburgh.
This was a road trip.
Yeah, it was a road trip. I've always wanted to do.
Best?
Yeah, I've done long road trips, but I've always wanted to do like a coast to coast one.
Yeah.
So I went from here to Pittsburgh, and then took the car up to New York, so I can be like, I did coast to coast. But yes, I stopped.
Did you take the northern route or the southern route to get to Pittsburgh?
We took kind of the middle route.
Which is
so we went to Vegas was the first stop. Then it was
fantastic. Where'd you stay in Vegas?
Well, Airbnb. I mean,
really?
Yeah, but I used to live there, so
oh, okay.
Yeah, it was nice to kind of be there for a minute.
I always ask because I love the Strip.
Oh yeah, you do love the Strip. Okay, yeah. Okay.
For just a couple days. You
yeah,
know?
Sure. Like, for a couple days, but no. I mean, I lived there for like 9 months, so I definitely stay at the South Point or Red Rock a little further out.
Where all the locals go.
Yeah.
Okay.
But so then from there, it was like Salt Lake City. Then it was Wyoming. Then it was Kansas City, Missouri, which I fucking fell in love with, man.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about that city, but I was so taken by it.
Was it the barbecue?
The barbecue was incredible. Uh-huh. I went to Arthur Bryant's in a place called like Q39. That was really, really tasty.
Mm-hmm.
But we stayed there for a few days and it was amazing. It was so, I don't know, man. I felt, you know, I got the same feeling that I get when I feel like I just, I, I'm deciding to move to a city.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, hey, maybe Kansas City. I don't know. Paris of the Plains, they call it. Maybe it's the time. Really? So, yeah, maybe it's time to go there. And then from there, we went to.
You could buy two houses there for what you could get over here.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then we went to St. Louis. Uh-huh. Then Indianapolis, I think.
You didn't go to my hometown?
Where's your hometown?
Chicago.
No, we kind of, it was like we were.
You got to be going there.
I went to Chicago and I was there in April for the eclipse. So I've been there recently. Yeah.
All right.
So then, yeah, then we did that. Then Cincinnati and then Pittsburgh. And then I drove up because my brother lives in Jersey.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, oh, hey, I want to go see you now that I'm 5 hours away for a bit. Like, let's hang out. So we hung out one day and I was like, dude, like we got nothing to do. I'm like, bro, you live an hour from where the Bada Bing is, like the Satin Dolls, it's called, the strip club that was the Bada Bing in The Sopranos. We went to the Soprano house.
Oh.
Yeah, we drove up.
Which one? Tony's?
Tony's, yeah.
You can.
Oh, yeah, it's a real house.
It's just a regular suburban house?
I mean, it's a beautiful fucking house. It's like a mansion.
Yeah.
It's at the end of a block with like stunning homes in Jersey. And I mean, you know, it's like, do not enter, do not trespass, like, do not disturb occupants because so many people go there. But we went there. We went to Holston's, which is the restaurant from the final scene of the show. We did that. So,
that's right. You did.
So, you know.
Do they play Journey in that restaurant?
No, it's funny that those are like, there's not a, there. The little jukebox thing is there, but it's not connected to anything.
Yeah. It would drive me crazy.
But we had the onion rings. We had, you know. But, you know, so it was like, this was kind of, for me, a very spiritual thing of like getting away from LA, seeing more of the country, and then
do you recommend that people go to Holstein's?
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean,
was it a good experience?
Yes, I would say if you want very good American diner food, like burgers, French fries, onion rings, really good milkshakes. The booth that you know Tony and the family sat in is there. You can sit in it. Yeah, you can eat there.
So Tony took his family to the right place.
Yeah, he did. I would say like I'm a big fan of like a Bob's Big Boy.
Right.
So that's similar to that. And yeah, so I mean
Greasy Spoon.
Yeah. So for me that was, you know, getting away from LA and doing all that was a thing I needed because, you know, man, like the reason I wanted to, you know, explain to people what happened is like, you know, so much is made of like what the sort of what the intentions of people who sue the government are, or let me start that over.
Go ahead.
So much is made of the intentions of like families who sue the city, sue the police. You know, I've hated to see over the years, anytime something was printed about us, oh, whatever, they're only doing this for the money. I'm like, dude, I don't care about money. It's nice to have. And I'm very grateful that I'm able to like provide for my dad. You know, me and Melly always wanted to get him a house. Now we can fucking do that. Like, of course, I'm not saying that there's nothing nice about it. I'm not saying that's not its own reward or whatever. But like, I would rather have Melly back,
right?
You know, like, and the only reason that you sue the city is because, honestly, I mean, that's one of your only options that you have. You know, we seek justice in whatever ways are available to us. And so for us, it was like, yeah, of course we want, you know, we want some security and we want to send a message, but we also, I mean, part of it was also knowing like what were her last moments like, and like as hard as that is to hear about, we wanted to, and I think we were denied some of those things. I mean, we can watch that video, and I don't know that I ever can, but we were denied kind of the full closure of like this is what happened, this is how it played out, and we've talked to people who were there that day, employees and all that, but you know, this was sort of to be like we wanted there to be a public record of what the police did to Melly.
Yeah.
And the settlement, I mean, again, it's you know, it is what it is, and it's going to be our duty to continue the story and to continue holding their feet to the fire. But, you know, there was, you know, people only sue the city and do these things because out of desperation. You know, it was like, we need to, like, Melly's name is not in the news as much anymore because life goes on.
Yep.
We need her to be remembered. We need people to remember that something bad happened here. And we need the people who did this to be held accountable to some degree. Unfortunately, I mean, it sucks to read that the city is broke. And it's like, well, our settlement is a small part of that. But, you know, it's like, it's just, I'm sorry, but like, we did what we, you know, we did what the only thing that we had that we could. We sued them, and that was our only form of recourse. I've done my best to hold their feet to the fire and call them pieces of shit in every medium I can, you know, podcasting and newspapers and all that. But it's just like, you know, we were not, We did not ask to be part of this. We did not be asked to be part of this tapestry of fucked up shit that happens in Los Angeles. You know, it's like Melly's murder now is a part of the greater story of Los Angeles. And for better or for worse, you know, we want to make sure that we're the ones telling that story and not the police, not the media. Whatever they say about Melly is coming from us because we knew her. We knew who she was. We knew what her life looked like. And we knew that, like, she was just a regular person, you know, at work. She wasn't some, she was the most important person to us, but she's a very regular person. And I think that that people need to know that. Like, she was a person doing what we're all supposed to be doing.
Right.
Working, giving back to society, whatever it was.
And you said the first show, she loved working there.
Yeah,
she was the type of Trader Joe's person that we love seeing.
It was annoying how much she loved it. I'm like, God, I'm like, Melly, just like, it's cool. Like, you don't have to, like, you know, be all like woo woo Trader Joe's, but she bought into the to the culture of it, and you know, I never did, but
right.
she did, and I'm happy.
That was the funniest part about that episode was you were saying how bad you were at
as
a Trader Joe's employee, and how great she was.
Yeah, my customer service days are long behind me. I don't have the temperament for it. I would consider myself a nice person. Yeah. I love people. I'm always trying to be there for people.
Yeah.
I don't want to serve them. I'm sorry. I just don't.
Almost every week, I hear about a cop doing the most insane stuff. Sadly, I hear it more from the police's Twitter than I do from my favorite newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And that breaks my heart too, because I'd rather hear it from the newspaper, but I'm glad I'm hearing it from William.
Yeah, but I think that shows, it points to the priorities of, you know, a concerned citizen, you know, a guy who like trolls up and down the streets looking for cops doing bad things, because he knows. He's a black dude in LA. He knows.
And it ain't that hard for him to find.
Yeah. And then it points at the priorities of like this newspaper, this media institution that we're supposed to trust, but who rarely does a critical analysis of anything the police do that kind of gives them the, you know, they take their statements as fact. They never really question them.
Are you not a fan of James Quealy?
I know him a little bit. I don't know that I read his stuff
often.
Who
covered your sister's saga?
I mean, I've talked to a lot of people. I mean, I was talking to Emily Alpert Reyes like long ago. She used to do that beat.
Right.
Talked to like yeah. I think I've talked.
Did you like her coverage?
She was cool. Yeah. We were cool. I haven't talked to her in a while, but I think I've definitely talked to James. Zanizer was asking for quotes for a while because I guess he was a
City Hall guy.
I mean, I've talked to a lot of people, and I feel like most of the journalists I've spoken to were coming at it from a place of like, you know, I never felt really disrespected. Did I think sometimes their reporting was a little lacking? I mean, Zanizer, you know, he's a guy who I talk to here and there because it's good to know what the journalistic mind is thinking in that realm. But, you know, I don't know. Sometimes it's like, again, I look at this stuff and like let me say this. I appreciate that you are still doing your best to keep the optimism of like, there's some good in these things and we should like maybe continue to like look for that. Whereas I'm very cynical. A lot of my friends are very cynical. And we're like, move past that shit.
And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Because we need people to push us no matter where we are. Because we need to grow as people and we need to learn as people. So film the police looking for the evil of the cops. Seek and you shall find, right?
Yeah.
And so that's what, when you had 1,000 employees at the LA Times, it wasn't that hard to seek and find.
Yeah.
But now that they have a fraction of that, it is a little harder, which is why we need film the police more and more, and why we need people city council more and more, which is why it's going to break my heart if you move to Maui, because... Which isn't to say that they don't need a people city council.
Yeah.
But
that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I tell people too. I'm like, hey, wherever if I end up somewhere else, like the problem exists everywhere. You know, like I'm not going to just like lay down and not do anything. I'm like, if I'm in a major city, they have a police department that probably has done a lot of fucked up shit. So I'm not going to give up on that. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's who knows what the future holds. But I mean, there's definitely a sense of like, accomplishment that comes with this, the sense of, you know, it's just still like, I don't know, man, like, cool. But like, Melly's still not here. And that right. is the existential thing that I feel like is still tugging at me of just like, yeah, you did all this and you're part of all this. And, you know, but your sister's still not here. And like, I have to learn to be okay with that. And, you know,
how can we as supporters of you and your family keep her in our thoughts?
I mean, I think just like, ultimately, like, not letting up on bringing the pressure to not only the police, but like anybody who is advocating for a world that is not a just world. Well, you know, government agencies that do bad things, city departments that run cover for the police. I think we have to look at this stuff with a critical eye. We have to bring a level of analysis to like why things are done the way they're done, why we choose to continue to govern the city the way we do, even when, you know, it's been proven over and over that like the LAPD will not see reason. They will not ever be made to feel bad about something. They will never give money back to the communities. So we, you know,
this is a great point because over the last couple of years, they said we need a budget increase mm-hmm. so that we can recruit new officers.
Yeah.
They never did. And they kept getting increases. So where'd that money go to? And they could say, well, we spent it on advertising in Dallas or whatever.
Yeah.
But it didn't work. So can we have our money back? And can we lower? And crime didn't go up with fewer officers. Yeah. So why do we keep giving them more and more money?
But that's what I'm telling you. That to me is the crux of what understanding the defund movement. You know, I always say defund as a means to abolition, but even just starting people on the defund movement is like, think about it from a standpoint of like, have the cops ever come back and said, hey, we actually didn't need all that money. So here's $20 million that you can use. You know, we can recommend using it for schools, whatever, right? Something good for the community. Oh, There's never been a moment where they've ever done that.
I did the math the other day. I'm a poetry major. So my math might be wrong.
Oh, okay, damn.
If they moved 4% of mm-hmm. their budget, the LAPD's budget, to Metro, Metro would be free.
Yeah.
4% is nothing.
I know.
KDL gave them $3 million to protect the graffiti towers, which to me is like the biggest payoff there was to support me in my election against Isabel. Because first of all, it was already tagged.
Yeah.
Secondly, it's a private building. That's not City Hall that they tagged. Yeah, yeah. So why is KDL giving city money to an organization who's already funded, but 3 million more? And so to your point we need a better word than defunding, though.
I mean, yeah, whatever. People, but it's like, that's the thing. We can come up with a better word and people are going to
reallocate the police.
Yeah, that's fine.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Because that's what I'm saying about Metro. Metro should be free. And if we're a modern city, I mean, can you imagine if the Olympics came here and the mayor said, I don't want you to drive your cars to these events. I've made Metro free for you. She would have a leg to stand on. But right now, if she's saying, don't go to the Coliseum and park there, people are going to be like, do you live here? Best person to ask about this.
Thank you.
Because you say you're not religious.
Sure, yeah.
I don't even think you're a spiritual woo-woo person.
Not really, no.
Have you experienced any weird moments where you're like, oh, Melly just said hi to me, or the lights flickered, or something? Did you feel any energy? Has there been anything like that for you?
I mean, I think that, you know, it's funny. If you were to ask my dad, he would have like a dozen, you know, it's either I'm not looking for it or I tend to, that just doesn't happen as often. I mean, there was definitely some times during this road trip that I was going through back in August where I felt like cared for. And I felt like, okay, like I'm in an unfamiliar place and there was no place that was really like scary or dangerous, but it was like, oh, I'm somewhere far away from home. I don't really know what my life is going to look like.
Yeah.
But I definitely felt like I'm doing good and I'm where I need to be right now. Even if it's not home, or if it's an unfamiliar place, I felt like cared for. So I'll say sometimes like that will kind of come into my head and make me feel like, okay, like, you know what? I'm getting to a better place with this.
Is it impossible for you to go to that Trader Joe's?
Not impossible. I mean, I go once or twice a year. I mean, usually for the anniversary, they have a nice mural there.
They do.
But I mean, you know, I'm not shopping there. I don't, you know, it just doesn't make, I'm like, there's other Trader Joe's, there's other grocery
You don't
want to
go there.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems, it's like.
It makes sense you don't want to go there.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's weird to have a place in town where I just don't go, where I'm like, I pass by there, and I'm like, oh, and then I'm like, you know what, whatever. Like,
yeah.
I can go buy frozen orange chicken somewhere else, you know? Again, once a year, twice a year, that's fine. But, you know, I mean, it's, oh, you know what, I'll say, last thing I'll say about going back to the previous
point.
Don't
even look in my freezer. I've got
The last thing I'll say about being cared for, so, or feeling Melly, so the last trip, one of the last things I did with Melly, we went to go visit my brother who lives in Jersey for New Year's 2018. So within 6 months, she'd be dead. We went and we spent New Year's Day in New York and the following day as well. And that second day was just me and Melly because my brother has a daughter. It's the whole thing. So we went in there and just had a fucking amazing blast of a day. We walked to Golden Gate or the Brooklyn Bridge, and she saw the Statue of Liberty, and we saw like Central Park. It was incredible. One of the best days. We got some beers at a bar, had ramen. It was cold as hell. Had some delicious ramen. We're like, oh, New York is so cool. And so when we were on the phone, I happened to be visiting my brother at the end of August in Jersey, and I had spent the day in New York and was like getting ready to come back. Penn Station, where Melly and I had come from Jersey into New York and then, you know, gotten back to Jersey. And so I was at Penn Station and I got the call saying, hey, they're voting on it right now. City Council is voting on the settlement to be finally like fully approved. And I was really bummed that I wasn't next to my dad and my lawyer here in LA because they were afterward. They went to the Trader Joe's at Silver Lake, took pictures. My dad talked to some, you know, reporters who were there. And so I felt really bad that I wasn't there, but I was in New York and I was like, you know what? This is one of the last places that I felt very happy. And that where I had Melly, next to me and I could touch her and feel her. And so being here while this happens to me felt like there was something cosmic at work. I'm like, I happened to be there. Yeah. We kind of thought the vote would happen within the stretch of a few days, but it happened to be that day when I'm on my way to Penn Station and that to me felt like, okay, like there's something here. Maybe Melly's out there watching me or some entity is looking out for me or making this moment more significant. Because if I had been, you know, I mean, if I'd been anywhere, it would have been, you know, significant because it's a life-changing thing. But being there with the impact, the heaviness of Melly having been there with me years before and how much of a fun time we had. And that was like one of the, you know, that was the last trip we took as you know, as siblings. And
and how great that City Council, who you yell at viciously, laughably had to approve this money.
It was
how great.
I mean, they voted,
you know some of them wanted to say,
of course. Yes, I mean, that was what I talked to people about. They're like, are you scared that like they're going to vote no? I'm like, first of all, I don't think they're going to vote no. They usually vote unanimously for this stuff. But I'm like, but also
because
I don't,
they have no courage.
Yes. But I remember telling people, I'm like, but I doubt, because even if they vote, some people vote against it and it passes.
Yeah.
I doubt that they want to put their reputations in jeopardy. Right.
That's right.
Ugo, Nithia, people who hate me.
Officer
are not
Tracy.
Are not going to vote no because they know we're going
Nithia
to show up.
Hate you?
It's a whole thing. Anyway, I've been critical of her a lot in the past.
I didn't expect those guys to vote against you.
Yeah, but Tracy, John Lee, all these people, I'm like, yeah, they fucking hate me.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I don't think, I know that they know that if they vote against us, we're going to show up at their house and protest. We're going to go and make their, you know, we're going to honk and bring signs and we're going to tell them what pieces of shit they were to deny this family what is rightfully theirs.
Right.
And so, you know, there was never necessarily like a fear. It was more kind of like, wouldn't it be funny if these fools, knowing that it's in the bag, that they can afford to vote no.
Right.
Wouldn't it be funny if one of these motherfuckers did it? And they didn't, which is good.
It is
and,
good.
And, you know, I guess thank you for that. But, I mean, you know.
I got two more things to ask you about.
Yeah.
First of all, thanks for spending time
dude,
with me
dude, of course.
Today.
This is great, man.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for letting me talk. I talk a lot. You know how it goes?
That's what the microphone's for.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Okay. And you don't have to answer either of these questions. We can edit it out.
Okay.
First, the settlement.
Yeah.
This is a record-setting settlement, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys start even higher than this? Can you talk about that?
I mean, yeah, we mediated a little bit like at the end of last year, very, very sort of loose.
Just
kind talks.
Of threw it out throughout. A
yeah,
number.
there was numbers thrown around. I won't get into specifics.
It's fine.
But there were definitely numbers thrown around where it was like we just knew that they were. We kind of knew where we would end up with them. But we're like, let's try for something because we would say, hey, this is where our starting number is. And they would say, cool. And it would be like the disparity would be huge.
Oh,
like
really?
Insultingly, oh. Where we're like, you know, again, these are the initial talks. So they're.
And did your lawyer say, don't get upset. This is just how the game
yeah,
is?
Yeah. They were like, hey, by the way, just be prepared. We're going to say this number and they're going to say something insanely lower. And we're like, okay. And then that's exactly what happened.
Because I would have been pissed off.
Yeah. We're like, okay, this is what we want. And they're like, hey, how about 500K? We're like, what? Fuck you. You know, like that was, I would say that's
Let's
actually.
Fight now.
Yeah. That was their first offer was $500,000 to
was
settle
not.
The case. It was. No bullshit.
How long ago was that number thrown?
That was October of last year. So we had talked a little bit at the end of last year. And then we kind of got to a place where we're like, you're not taking this seriously. Go
right.
Fuck yourself. And then, you know, then we started again and it would be like, okay, this number, they'd be like, well, we're thinking about a range from here to here.
Yeah.
And then finally they got to the number that 9.5 and we're like, okay, you know what? Like we could sit here and do this for a few more weeks, but like we're.
So maybe those lawyers deserve the 40%.
Oh no. I mean, no, I'm fine with them. I have no problem with that. I told one of my lawyers, Ron, when we first started, I'm like, hey, like, I want you to make a lot of money from this settlement. And I said, and I say that because that means that you did everything that you could in your power to get us what we want.
Good.
I said, so do that. And they did that. And they definitely are making a nice chunk of money as well. But yeah, they were that first phone call we knew was going to be insulting. They really thought they were fucking with another family.
500,000.
I'm like, you know what? Again, never about the money, but I'm like, but that's bullshit. I'm like,
because that means the family would have gotten maybe 300.
300, and
do you get
lawyers,
taxed on that?
No, it's a,
oh, really?
It's a, yeah, yeah,
oh,
it's
that's
nice.
Good. Okay,
that's the one of the only silver linings is that it's
that,
a,
I didn't
yeah,
know that.
Yeah. So, but you know, 500K. I'm like, dude, really? Like,
yeah.
So you really think, you know,
you're paying your chief more than that for a whole year?
Dog, that's exactly what I'm saying. I'm like, yeah, that's bullshit. That's a rounding error for the city budget.
Right.
I'm like, fuck you.
Okay. So the second thing is before we started, we talked about a square.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, yeah. So I, you know, because we didn't go to trial, we didn't get to do the big media circus of it all. And because obviously we want to just keep Melly's name out there, we want to do a square dedication. So I'll say this, the initial idea that we had and that my dad still wants to do, which we will try to do is we wanted to rename, there's a street. So it's Hyperion and Monin is that street where it's where the parking lot is, right in front of the store. It kind of bisects Hyperion.
Oh.
Monon, I think it's how you spell it.
What,
so it's where the stoplight is, right there.
The stoplight where the gas station is?
It's directly in front of the store.
Where the crosswalk
yeah,
is.
Yeah, so it's a street called Monon.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And we thought, okay, well, maybe we'll rename it like Melly's Way or Melly Street. That is a very long process that would require us to.
It's barely a street.
I know. Well, that's why we said we're not obviously trying to do Hyperion. That's the whole thing.
Right.
Monon, it goes up a few blocks or whatever. That's still something that we're advocating for. That's still something we want to do.
Like that.
I believe it crosses over two districts.
Oh.
So we'd have to work with two offices. I think one of them would be Ugo's. One would be Nithia's.
Both DSA,
right? Yeah. So we all rotate. We're all Antifa. We hang out at the same parties. No, no. So that's something that we still want to do. And I want to put that out there just because, like, okay. I want to hold myself accountable and my dad to be like, we're going to follow through, because that one, you got to go get signatures and do this thing. And the city can be hesitant about renaming streets. We're still going to get that done. It's just going to take a little bit longer.
I love that.
So I talked to someone in Ugo's office, Sachin. He's a good dude. And he was like, hey, but have you thought about a square dedication? And he's like, you know, they do this for people who are luminaries, people who grew up in neighborhoods, whatever, people who've died. It would be like, you know, you have a plaque and then you have a little spot or whatever. I said, cool. So I'm like, he's like, but it's not where you would want to do it. It's not our district. It's Nithya's office. So I reached out to someone there. And we're kind of in the nascent stages of figuring out Meli Corrado Square.
Okay.
So it would most likely be around where the Silver Lake Trader Joe's is.
Okay.
Maybe in a different part of the neighborhood, just because, like, there might be more open space. But my vision for it would be, obviously, we have a nice plaque that explains who Meli was and what happened to her. And I told the person at Nithya's office, I'm like, hey, we're not going to shy away that she was killed by the police.
Right.
If we want to make the language a little bit more, you know,
instead of murder,
palatable or whatever, yeah, fine. But, like, we are going to put that she was a victim of police violence. She's like, okay, I'm pretty, you know, I'm like, if we get pushback, we'll deal with it when we get there.
Yeah.
But for now, my vision for it would be a place where people can meet and hang out. And if we do something in dedication of Meli, that'll be our kind of jumping off point. People can come and hang out. We want to plant sunflowers because that was her favorite flower. Mm. We want it to be a little oasis in the middle of that stretch of road where people can come hang out, see who Meli was, feel her spirit. You know, we're trying to figure out if there's any walls we can use for a mural. Mm. We want this to be a square that you would see around town, but, like, we wanted to do it our own way. You know, we want to make sure that Meli is remembered for who she was and what she meant to people. And so that right now, so best case scenario is it's done in 6 months. Usually that's how long it takes, especially if you're getting the ball rolling right now. So what I'm hoping for is, you know, holidays are coming up, so it'll be a little bit of a slower process, but I'm hoping that by July of next year, which would be the 7th anniversary of Meli being killed, the square will be open and people can come hang out. And, you know, I mean, depending on how big it is, you know, we want people to be have picnics there, bring their kids there. You know, I met a woman who her daughter May was born the day Meli was killed.
Ugh.
And so they're sort of inextricably linked forever.
Wow.
And I check in with her on Twitter every now and then, like, hey, how's May? It's like, oh, great. She's, you know, 6 years old now. You know, she was a newborn baby and she's going to be 7 in July. Like, I want people to bring their kids and bring their dogs and you know, clean up after your dog, obviously. but you know, we want this to be a place, a gathering place to remember Meli by. And yeah, so that'll hopefully, we're going to drive around soon and scout some locations that are going to be, you know, candidates for that. But yeah, that's kind of the one of the enduring things we're going to do for Meli. And you know, it's going to be, you know, and it's going to be the one in a long list of things we're going to do. And you know, ultimately, we got the settlement. We're going to take a rest for a moment, and then we're going to go back and keep fucking with the police. You know, there's no rest for us, man. You know, like, this is not, again, it's, we weren't doing this to do some lawsuit and walk away and count our money. It's like, no, well, yeah. I mean, hey, I'm going to try to get my dad a house and fucking go and take on the police, because now I have resources and I can stay and do whatever. I don't have to worry about this getting in the way of our trial.
Would you be interested in running again? This time against Hugo.
Dude, that is, man, that's funny. You're like the fourth person to ask me this week.
It seems like a very easy seat.
I ran right into now. Someone in Little Tokyo the other day. He's like, hey, man, the streets are talking about you running again. I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, I there was a time where I said I was never going to run again. There was. I was very, it took a lot out of me.
You've gone through a lot.
Yeah, man. It took a lot out of me, and I wanted to just, like, move past it.
Yeah.
And then one day, I don't know what it was, I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it again.
The square that I want you to have is in Silver Lake, where they painted the street green. The hamburger place window.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. Wait, yeah, actually. So it's funny now that I feel like that would be a good place to do the square. I mean, yeah. It's not where the
it's not Silver Lake, but a park that, yet.
But it's still there. But I mean, but it's still in the area. No, I'm saying, but it's not near
it's
the
not,
store.
It's not. But I don't know if you have a lot of spaces.
Yeah, that's
over,
what I'm,
near
yeah,
the
it's
store.
Yeah, it's kind of because Rowena and Hyperion. I'm like, that's a big intersection, but there's really nothing there that lends itself to that. So maybe, yeah, actually, well, you just gave me an idea.
Really?
Thank you, man. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to look
well,
into
the
that.
The other one I was thinking of when you mentioned that is the reservoir. The Silver Lake Reservoir.
Yeah.
Which isn't really a hangout spot, but the window place is.
Yeah.
I mean, Farmer's Market.
I love that little place,
full of
man.
Life.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so yeah. I mean, that would be, yeah, you just gave me. But yeah, as far as running, I mean, Ugo, you know, he seems like he's faltering and... You know, if I feel like if my messaging can be good enough and
yeah,
I can figure out how to you know, I will be to the left of him for sure.
Right.
But I do think taking him on would be fun. Again,
you would be the left of all of them.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, for sure.
Which is what Isabel said is the reason to vote for her. She was like, I might not be as left as you want me to be, but I'm still further left than everybody else. And I will help people like Unisys feel more comfortable going left.
Yeah. We'll see, man. You know, and yeah, who knows? I mean, I may announce something in the next year, but I'm really, you know, I'm at a crossroads where I have 10 different things I want to work on.
Good.
And I'm going to try to figure out which two or three to really dive into. But running for office again, I mean, it's, I do like being a candidate. You know, I do like crafting policy. That
would
be fun.
You also seem like somebody who does want to do more than just talk about it.
Yeah, of course.
You know?
Yeah.
Because we can just bullshit all day long here, but like, what good is it really unless you make the votes? And these people just don't. So like, this guy, Andrew Ruddick, who I've had on the show.
Yeah.
His only thing is, I want Trump's star removed from
Hollywood. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah.
And none of these dudes will even like propose it.
Yeah, that's so weird, man.
And it's like, and they're doing it out of like, collegial, you don't do stuff to another guy's district, but mm-hmm. Hugo won't touch it. And so I bet you would.
I mean, yeah, I would say, yeah, but here, but okay. You know, come with me on this little trip.
Okay.
I would say it would be something to do, but very low priority. Like I would say, hey, we're going to do it. I'll put someone on it.
Right.
But, you know, I want to work on the bigger stuff.
Of course you do. But what I'm saying is, on this, it's just one bill you pass.
Yeah.
You just
say,
hey, are we cool with getting rid of his star?
Yeah. It's weird that, and also it'd be like such an easy win.
The easiest win. It would make so much news.
Yeah.
And
it would
separate the fake Democrats from the real Democrats in council.
Yeah.
Would you consider yourself a Democrat if you were in council?
No, I mean, I would. I mean, luckily,
would you run as a socialist or something?
Well, they're nonpartisan seats, so you don't have to. Yeah, I mean, you know, you can see, obviously, you can guess where people land.
Yeah.
But no, it's a nonpartisan seat, so you don't have to. You don't have to have an affiliation.
You don't have to declare anything.
No, I mean, you know, I definitely was a registered Democrat when I started running, just because, like, oh yeah, whatever, I don't know.
Yeah.
But then I registered as, I guess, not the independent party, but you know,
yeah,
independent, whatever. So because I'm like, you know, I don't. Listen, I'm gonna go vote after this, and I truly, truly do not know if I'm gonna fill out any bubbles for president.
Well, but that's what sucks about the Electoral College. Our vote doesn't count.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I did it last night as a black person who was raised by a black woman.
Yeah.
I mean, no messing around on this one. I got to do it because I voted for Kanye last time, and my mom was like, "What?" I was like, "He's black, Mom."
That's amazing. Wow, man.
But it doesn't count here.
Yeah, no. And you know? Yeah.
Which sucks. Our votes should count.
Dude, I mean, I was in Pittsburgh for 2.5 months.
Yeah.
Swing state, man. It is a whole different ballgame there. It is. You're inundated with this shit. It's crazy, man. Like, I've never had a place. I've never lived in a place where my vote was actually going to count for something.
Right.
I didn't register there or anything, but I was like, oh, it'd be kind of interesting to actually see it count. But I mean, again, whatever.
Well, be careful, because I called one of my best friends who's in Vegas right now, and she's like, you're lucky that you even got through, because this phone is ringing so much.
Oh wow!
I turn it off. Like it's a pain in the ass for the swing states.
Yeah, I can imagine. I know tonight's gonna be kind of interesting. And
I want people to follow you on Twitter.
Oh yeah, please.
Because you're good at it.
Thank you. I do my best.
And One of the benefits of having a few money, as Tony Soprano would call it, is you're truly free to like say whatever you want because you're not applying for jobs right now. Even if you're running, even if you do run against Hugo, which I hope you do, because I'm begging William to do it and he won't do it.
Oh, and
wouldn't he be great?
That? Yeah, for sure.
Because he would win in a landslide.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, beat Hugo first and then run for mayor because you might win that friggin' thing too. And he's like, I don't want to do that. I think you would beat Hugo, but I want people to follow you on Twitter. Is your handle still Digital Earn?
URN, yeah.
Are you going to change that now that you've won?
No, I mean, I don't know. I think it's
still a tribute.
Oh wait, no, it's actually
That's not what that's for.
No, that's actually because my Instagram is Digital Ash, so. There's an album by my favorite band called Bright Eyes, the band Bright Eyes.
Connor Oberst,
yeah. Their album Digital Ash in a Digital Urn. So being a fan, I just like was like, hey, I'm going to get these usernames
15
years ago or something.
That
yeah.
Way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was
I'm such an idiot. Maybe we should just end on that. Albert, God bless you.
Thank you, man.
I'm so happy for you.
Thank you, brother.
We will be following you at Digital Urn, the podcast.
You look up All Valley Everything.
All Valley Everything.
Oops All Bangers.
These are two different ones?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. One's a music podcast.
Okay.
Oops All Bangers. And then People City Propaganda. We don't do as many episodes, but we have one or two coming out soon that we're editing right now.
Really good logo on that one, too.
Oh, yeah. Dude, Philip Kim. He's listening. He's fucking genius graphic designer.
Yeah.
One of the most radical, cool dudes I know.
Is he the mind behind some of these ACAB stickers I have?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I mean he does stuff. He did stuff for Nithia. He did stuff for Kenneth. Like the guy is just a genius and we sit around and like toss ideas for like stickers or whatever and he like makes them make sense. He's a great dude. I love him so much.
Philip Kim.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to talk to him next time.
Dude, no, he has lived such an insane life. He is from New York, was a musician. He played in bands, like part of the New York scene. Can tell you that he like was in a songwriting competition with Ween for like this Pizza Hut commercial. Like, and this is before he even got to LA and then started getting involved in like all this like leftist organizing.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to pitch him on this because he's a little bit more of a private dude, but I think he would be so good to have on. He's great.
I want to give props to people who are doing creative stuff. And,
yeah.
And people might not think that you guys are on the right path, but they've got to get a smile at least off those stickers.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, and listen, those stickers can be seen on the other side of the country. People love them, you know? So if you see like the, abolish, or what is it? All Power to the People and it's the Powerpuff Girls. That was us, man. That was us, bro. Anyway, thanks for having me on, man. Appreciate
you. Thank you, Albert.
Thank you, brother.
Woo! How great was Albert? When you stoke us, you're saying, thanks so much for this follow-up. Here's some cash since life has no meaning anymore. So shout out to our Patreon, Nancy Rommelman, Sean Atlow, Matt Mills, Sean Wallace, Greg and Molly, Jamie Taylor, Mark Johnson, Kira Ann, Barney Granke, Ben Welsh, Jen Adams, Trevor Wilson, Bree Wild, Dougie Gyro, Christina Up North, Robin Carey, Adam Shorn, Ben from Down Under, Chris from the ATX, Gregor, and Phil. To be a Patreon, just go to patreon.com/hereinLA. Want to support us, but moving to Canada is expensive. No problem. Post this episode on your Facebook or Twitter or scrawl it on the bathroom wall. It's spelled H-E-A-R in L-A. Thank you, Albert, and thank you, Patriots.